Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. I am back on a Tuesday afternoon to give all of my observations, thoughts, reactions to the A-League Men weekend that was, because, yeah, there was a lot which actually happened on the weekend. I've got a shit ton of notes here to talk about, to go over observations, thoughts, yeah, all of it. A lot of talking points, a lot of narratives. We're getting into the business end, so things are heating up in particular. We'll talk about different permutations and stuff as well. So yeah, recording this on a Tuesday. We're only going to have two pods this week, so this one, and then I might have something on Friday, depending on what happens, really. There's a lot going on, particularly in an A-League sense at the moment. We've got things like the Newcastle situation. We've got this latest stuff now with Nestorio Incunda and the Oli Roos, which I'm going to talk about a bit later. There's all sorts of stuff going on. But we are going to start with the A-League Men round that was. So let's go back to Friday night and talk about the Wanderers against Brisbane Roar, a game which I wasn't able to watch live, but I went back and watched the extended highlights and the reaction from both coaches. And yeah, some interesting stuff here. So first of all, basically, the Wanderers. So I said on the Friday pod I did last week with Caden Foley, where we talked about Melbourne City, and I said how, you know, basically I felt the Wanderers are going to keep leaving the door open for Melbourne City. And as we then found out a day later, Melbourne City didn't take the opportunity given to them by the Wanderers. And what do you know? The Wanderers lose at home to Brisbane, a game they definitely should win. You know, you're coming up against a team who's still vying for finals in Brisbane, but a team that you're better than on paper, I think, and you should definitely beat at home. And to their credit, as Marco Rudin talked about after the game, I did think it was a better performance by the Wanderers. I actually think it was a better performance than their previous 2 weeks, where they actually did win against Perth and Macarthur. So, you know, this time they don't take their chances though, and they don't get the result. And you know, the flip side, although they created their chances, and you know, you can point to, hey, chance creation was great, we played well, but you can't switch off on two corners like that the way they did. I mean, it was really poor. I mean, the first one, basically Aldred just gets a free run and jump at the ball, which I don't think should be allowed. But also, like, Marcelo's there, you know, so I think some questions should be asked of him as to why. You know, maybe because Aldred's coming in with momentum and he's meeting it at speed, but Marcelo maybe needs to be stronger as well. I don't know. And then the second goal, I mean, you can't, basically with defending corners, it's like this. If you don't get the first contact and the ball, and you don't get the second contact, well, more than likely the opposition is going to get a shot on goal, if not score. So that's what we saw. The ball comes in, initial header, no one gets a touch on it, falls for Henry Hoare, easy finish, bottom corner. So, yeah, really poor from the Wanderers. Really poor from the Wanderers to basically just give Brisbane two goals like that, and then not take their chances. So, not what you need at this point of the season. And I'm going to talk about something that Rudin said after the game in a moment, as usual, because I think I spoke about it last week. I think I was talking with Jake, and we spoke about Marco's moments, how it's like a new segment maybe every week. I think maybe next season I might have to do that, provided obviously he's still a Wanderers coach. Because, yeah, just every week there's some ridiculous line which is put out in a press conference. But anyway, in terms of Brisbane, Macklin Freak, who we have spoken about a bit on this podcast before, if you go back and listen to our grading that we did a couple months back of 57 young prospects in the league, and we spoke about Macklin Freak, and me and Jack Tuhill, I know Jack Tuhill in particular is very, very high on Macklin Freak, and like, kind of for good reason. You know, a lot of people around the league, I don't think, talk about him like in the same sense that we talk about Alex Paulson or like Joe Gauchy when he was here, for example. But I mean, Macklin Freak is a seriously, seriously good goalkeeper. Like, holy shit. And, you know, I actually think it was kind of a shit penalty, to be honest with you, from Antonsen. But Freak, just in general, the save off Lockie Brook in the first half, gets a strong palm to it, palms it away from goal two, which is always important when you're looking at goalkeepers and their saves. But I was kind of looking and, okay, where does he rank league-wide? Because Jack, I know, had him like, he's like, I think he's like a top three, like one of the best keepers in the league. I know Jake, for example, is like Alex Paulson is number one. It's not even close. So if I quickly go through all the teams, okay, the Mariners, Danny Vukovic, is he better than Danny Vukovic? Yeah, I'd probably say so at the moment. I still have Paulson over him. Yeah, okay. is he better than Paul Izzo? I mean, it depends how you want to do this. You want to do this over careers or you want to do this over form? So let's just do it over form to make it easier, okay? So, all right. I think he's better than Vukovic right now. He's not better than Paulson. He's better than Paul Izzo. Sydney. Better than Andrew Redmayne? Yes, right now. Better than Phil Curto? That's, I would say, just. But honestly, Curto is another one who hasn't probably got the credit he deserves this season. Better than Lawrence Thomas / Daniel Margush, whoever's playing for the Wanderers? Yes. At the moment, Lawrence Thomas, if you asked me that question earlier in the season, he would be higher up, but I think of late hasn't been great. And then Melbourne City, so Jamie Young, yes, he's better than him. Is he better than James Delianov? Yes. Is he better than Ryan Scott? Yes, but again, that's a tight one. Is he better than Tom Heward-Bell? Yes. And is he better than Ollie Sale? Yes, I would say so. So I basically said there, Right now, I would say that Alex Paulson is the only goalkeeper better than Macklin Freak in the league right now. So my ranking there was probably basically it's Paulson and Freak at the top, and then it's kind of Curto, Ryan Scott. Honestly, like Ryan Scott, seriously, if you're watching this season, he's been fantastic. Like he's up there this season if we're going on form. He has to be up there. So it would be Curto, Ryan Scott. Would be up there too. And then you kind of got the rest in maybe an order where you'd have the ones further up would be kind of your Redmayne's and maybe your Izzo's and your Vukovic's because of their careers and their experience and stuff like that. But honestly, to be fair, now that you actually look at that too, you kind of think there's not really... There's good keepers in the league, but it's not really like... It's not like we've got 8 clubs, for example, that actually have clear number ones who are really good at the top of their game. Like, there's only a handful of clubs who really have those number ones who are in their prime, I guess. You know, so... And there's... Look, in the case of someone like Vukovic, you could also argue, like, he's not really asked to do maybe that much on a week-to-week basis. He is sometimes, like the Melbourne City game last week, for example. He made a couple of great saves, and maybe I'm not giving him enough credit, to be fair. But... yeah, it's like Paulson as well kind of gets the extra reps, right? Because Wellington do concede shots on goal and they do kind of rely on him a little bit to get them out of holes. So, yeah, but Freak is number two right now for me. He's got to be number two. Like he's coming up with big moments. His ball playing ability I've spoken about many times before on the podcast. So, yeah, he's up there for me. All right, couple things as well from this. So, the Raw. We know it's been a disaster. This whole season has been a disaster. On the pitch, off the pitch, it has been a disaster. And, you know, I'm not gonna go into it, but what I've heard throughout the season off the pitch, like, it's not good at all, just to put it lightly, with Brisbane. And Zakovic has kind of taken up this moniker of, ever since he come in, of we have to bring stability to the group. That's kind of the line that he keeps using in recent weeks. And I think he's done that. And honestly, I think what we've seen with when Aloisi was there and when Zakovic in this recent period, who I actually think, you know, as much as a character, there's been a lot that's been said about him and reported on from last season with Perth. I actually think as a coach tactically, I do think he's not bad, honestly. And I think he's really done a good job with this Brisbane team recently. Like, they're playing the attractive football that Ross had them playing at the start of the season, which is how they should play with the personnel they have, right? And I think we're seeing that this squad is actually not bad for Brisbane. I think there's a few areas which might need touching up, like maybe defensively, for sure. But you've got a good goalkeeper with Freak. You've got one of the best midfielders in competition with Jay O'Shea. And you've got a really dynamic attack, which can, you know, get firing all cylinders whenever you want. You've got guys in there, though, that are up and down, like Nikola Mlynarczyk. But, like... with Waddingham, with Henry Hoare, with O'Shea, with, you know, Ray House is there at the moment. I don't know if he's going to be there next season, but they've got talent. They've definitely got talent. What they need is just some fucking stability, like Jesus Christ. And look, that's what Zakovic is on about. That's what he's trying to bring. So he's doing a good job with that at the moment. Last thing on this game, back to Marco's moments. Quote from Rudin after the game, talking about Sydney FC, basically a little dig to kind of basically light a fire before the derby. That's what this really looked like to me. And he had this comment that perception's an interesting thing, and when talking about the Wanderers in comparison to Sydney FC at the moment. Few things here. So, look, he's not wrong at face value. At the end of the day, the Wanderers have only got 1 point less than Sydney FC. And they could still finish above them, right? Like, they could win the derby this week and be above Sydney FC. So, look, of course, that's not wrong from that perspective. They both won the same amount of games. The Wanderers have only had one more defeat. And the only thing where Sydney are like a plus A on them, goal difference-wise, right? But, like, I'm sorry, narratives and also, like, performance is very important when we talk about these things. Like, at the end of the day, Sydney FC annihilated the Wanderers recently in the last derby they played, right? 4-1, Wanderers weren't even close to winning that game, completely suffocated them. Like, you could see there was a clear gap between the teams. Now, maybe this week, the Wanderers are going to learn from that game, and we're going to see a team that is able to play out of the press a bit better. Sydney have had, you know, a bit of a wobble recently, which I'll talk about later. So, maybe that can expose some of their flaws too. But I can only go off what I've seen recently, and at the moment, I still say that Sydney FC and the Wanderers are not close right now when it comes to performance, when it comes to a couple of other things, which I'm going to talk about, which are identity and togetherness, are other two things. Like, the reality is, as much as Rudin wants to maybe say that the Wanderers are together as a group and they're heading in one direction, that's fine, yep, no worries. If you're so together, then I shouldn't hear reports that come out about you having beef with Lawrence Thomas or whatever it might be. Like, that stuff doesn't get out if you really are together as a group, you know? And I know people have hidden agendas and stuff like that who are around the club and maybe and stuff like that, but I just don't think, if you look at Sydney FC right now, like, there seems to be a clear togetherness in where they're going. I actually think at the moment what's happened in these last couple of games is they've kind of been hard done by in one game by refereeing, and I think also travel and fatigue is kind of set in for them too. Going to talk about that later. But, like, I don't think anyone can honestly make an argument that since Ufuk Tale's come in, like, the Wanderers have been on par with Sydney FC in terms of performances and results. Like, I haven't looked at actually the record, but you got to remember with Sydney FC, those first three games were coached by Steve Corriger. They lost all three. Basically, their season, in my opinion, if you want to look at since Tale came in, kind of started from round four when they went to Adelaide, if you know what I mean. So, I look at it from that perspective. Or was it round five? When they went to Adelaide, I can't remember off the top of my head. But from that game there onwards is kind of where I'm looking at this Sydney FC. And that team is a lot better than this Wanderers team. That's just the reality. And for me, that should be the favourites going to the derby this week. And not to mention, the statement wins. Like, there's been big statements for Sydney FC. We've seen both Mariners results. We've seen the derby statement, right? So they've had results where they've really shown that, hey, you know, we're actually a contender. The Wanderers, less so. Like, in bigger games, we haven't seen them. You know, they lost at Wellington, for example. They lost to the Mariners. They lost that derby we've spoken about, right? So, you know, win the derby this weekend, Marco, and then you can maybe talk a bit more about this. But I just don't think it's a really relevant subject, number one, and also a pertinent argument, to be brutally honest with you, too. Okay. Western United and MacArthur was the next game. Also a game, I was actually, to be fair, I was watching NPL action. I was out and about on Saturday, so this game came a little bit early for that. But, again, watch coach's reaction, watch the highlights. And first thing, MacArthur. Hey, what's going on with MacArthur, right? Like, looking over their shoulder a little bit. So first thing with the table now. So, which we haven't spoken about yet. But basically, if Adelaide win that game in hand they've got against Western United, which is next Tuesday, so a week from now, they will, provided... I mean, it's hard, though, because they've still got a win against MacArthur this week, who, funnily enough, we're about to talk about here. But basically, MacArthur are now, what, 4 or 5 points ahead of Melbourne City in seventh. But, like, this was a team a couple of weeks ago where we were kind of thinking of, okay, like, they're locked in, Victory are locked in, you know, Sydney are locked in. Like, and now Sydney and MacArthur are both looking over their shoulders instead of looking forward, which is not what they wanted to do. I think MacArthur, I wonder if there's been... Milos Teodosic actually admitted after the game that they got complacent. He kind of felt, must have felt something in the dressing room. And I wonder if there's been a feeling of getting too comfortable with being kind of fourth, fifth, and look, we're going to make finals, no worries. And then all of a sudden you're 2-0 up away to a team who's near the bottom, and you kind of get in your own head and think, yeah, like, we're going to win this game comfortably 3-4-0, and we'll get on to the next game. Before you know it, we're 15 minutes, 20 minutes in the second half, and you're 4-2 down. So, big reality check for them. A couple other things with them. We saw Danny De Silva make his second start of the season. Geez, it's been a rough few years for Danny De Silva. But the only thing with them, I'd say MacArthur, something I was thinking about, and I don't know how relevant it is, but I still think if they play at their best, I still think they can give anyone an issue. But they probably are a little bit over-reliant in kind of creating in transition, you know? And I think basically in that second half, you saw Western United nullify the transition moments, and once they could do that and then keep playing their football, which they've done really for most games this season, then they were able to create, and then finally they took their chances, right? So MacArthur, there's probably a fear there where if they aren't creating in transition and they nullified in that sense, and then they're going to leak goals, then there's not really much to them, right? So yeah, they've had a couple of reality checks. I mean, the Wanderers game, which they lost that first half, they could have definitely taken the lead, right? So they won't be too like in panic stations, but I do think they need to be careful. Let's put it that way. Like now you're going into Adelaide away on a Friday night. It's Nestoria and Kunda's last home game. The place is probably going to be packed. Like, it's just not easy. This is now not an easy game to bounce back from two straight defeats. So, yeah, this is the thing about the A-League, right? Like, you can kind of get comfortable quickly, and then all of a sudden it's like, shit, we have to get a result, and it's a tough game. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Friday's going to be really interesting to see what kind of character this MacArthur team has. Now, the biggest story out of this game was the Western United side, obviously. So, look, I'm not going to sit here and talk for 15 minutes about the Tarnit thing and the stadium or the facility, because it's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious that every A-League team, bar a couple, right, like probably Melbourne Victory, Sydney FC, should be in stadiums with like a 15K max, right? Like, it's so obvious. Like, if you go, and it's not so much, so with a facility like that, it's got, you know, holds 5,000, right? And we get this like here in South Australia, where you go, if you go to, there's a game which always springs to my mind, the State Centre here in South Australia, Jepps Cross. And when Adelaide City played Adelaide United for the first time those two clubs have ever played at senior level in the Australia Cup a couple years ago, and basically the place holds 7,000. One side is a hill, so you can kind of fit in however many you want. But the whole stand on one side was full, and I think it was about half full total. So it was about almost 3,500 people there. And the atmosphere was like fantastic. And that whole notion of having fans on top of the players during the game, being so close to it, and John Aloisi basically said after the game, like, it's that's what won us the game. Like, it's just obvious, right? And it's pretty obvious when you watch the highlights back, you know, the noise when the goal goes in. And it's hard when you're watching a video back and you're not there, but I would imagine anyone who was there in the moment at Tarnit for these goals and this rampage as it was happening, like, could feel like it was something really special when there was actually a real atmosphere built. So yeah, it's fantastic, you know, that's fantastic. And the good thing for them is they've kind of can use this as a bridge, right? It's kind of build a bit of a fan base, build something in this facility. And then when they're ready, hopefully at some point, you know, we all know the difficulties they've had with the stadium. Hopefully if that's ready, you know, in a couple of years' time, 3 years' time, whatever it is, and they've built up a real foundation of a fan base to move into, to, you know, 15,000-seater, right? Like, that's the reason. That's the reason we all talk about Hindmarsh and what a great A-League stadium it is, because it holds 15,000 max and Adelaide United average 10K, right? So, or 9K, whatever it is, right? So, It's pretty obvious. It's not a straightforward thing, but if A-League teams could start with the stadiums and say, okay, can we all get into more purpose-built facilities? How do we work towards that? And look, probably all the A-League clubs have got something like that in mind. Then we can go from there, because, you know, like, that's only 5K. And I think sometimes there's this feeling of, oh, but like, it looks like an NPL ground, right? But it's like, yeah, yeah, it does look like an NPL ground. You know what I mean? It's like, we're not the AFL. Like, you're not gonna pack out the MCG with 90,000. Like, it's just not gonna happen, right? So sometimes you got to start small and build, you know. So great day for them. Great day for them. And a couple of things from the game. So I'm not sure if anyone noticed. So I'm a Chelsea fan. I love Cole Palmer, or Cold Palmer, as we like to call him. Michael Roos actually did the Cold Palmer celebration when he scored his first goal. Yeah. So shout out to Michael Roos for that. Matthew Grimaldi, again, comes off the bench. Replaced, if I'm not mistaken, Ulysses de Vier, Daniel Pena, because Daniel Pena picked up a knock. Or I think what John Aloisi said, something in the pubic area. And yeah, Grimaldi comes in, great finish, well taken goal. I mean, he's the guy. And I want to talk about this like with Perth and Newcastle later too. All these teams at the bottom have still got something where they can go next season. Grimaldi's going to be a starter. Like, well, he has to be a starter, you'd think, right? Unless they go and recruit, I don't know. But if the squad's doesn't change too much for West United, he has to start, and he's going to be like a player that you can mold to then sell on, right? So he's a massive bright spark for them. He's been fantastic these last couple months, and I'm really excited to see what he can do next season. And also, the fourth goal in this game, Roos's second, was probably the most fucked sequence of events I think I've seen in the A-League this season. Like, basically, who was it? Garuccio smacks one into the bar from about 30 yards. Ball comes back out. Donaghy's on the edge of the box and kind of lofts the ball. Looks like it's going to chip. Curto hits the bar, and then Roos taps it in. And the whole time thinking that, like, watching that afterwards and just thinking, like, if you're Garuccio and Donaghy, you're probably thinking, like, fuck me. Like, really? It had to hit the crossbar? But, look, I'm sure they don't care. They got the points. And now Western, where are they now? They are, yeah, so they're off the bottom on wins. They got one extra win over Perth. Jesus Christ. But, yeah, it's kind of, again, like I said this a couple of weeks ago, they really are very similar to last year where they just kind of had this bizarre first half of the season where last year was different. They had players who I think didn't want to be there, and that doesn't help. But all of a sudden, they just come on like a freight train in the last kind of 10 games of the season, and that's what they're doing here. So it's going to be interesting. They've got... Who have they got? Who have they got this week? They have got the Mariners at home. Interesting, right? Because it's in Tarnit again, right? And the Mariners, we know what they're playing for now. But Western are not going to like, oh, we're just going to give you the premiership. No, no, no. Like, these guys are pretty focused on just kind of building something to build on for next season, right? And then they've got Adelaide at home, which, yeah, they'll want some revenge after the 4-1 defeat recently in Adelaide. So, yeah, great day for them. A couple things as well, probably, that they need to work on, I would say, from what I've seen. So, Aloisi mentioned it after the game, and transition, like, we know MacArthur are a good transition team, I just spoke about it, but against Adelaide, they got killed in transition, and here in the first half, they got killed in transition. So, it's something with them they need to tighten up. Dare I say, if you're going up against the Mariners, and you're not going to have good rest defense, good counter cover, good counter pressing when you lose the ball, like, they're going to kill you, right? So, They're gonna have to definitely look at that. I'm sure they're already looking at some video stuff, and yeah, it'll be a focus of training this week because transition's very important, as we know, in the A League, right? And for Western United, they've got to make sure they're tight with that. And just with Aloisi, like, his whole demeanor this season has just been it's been great to watch, honestly. Like, he's very patient. I think he knows the club's working hard to work towards an end goal, and I think he wants to be there for the long haul. That's what it seems like. And just his overall vibe of kind of, he's been very, very transparent, I feel, with the media, with certain topics. And you could see on Saturday in the press conference, like, when he was talking about the stadium, the facility, I keep calling it stadium, facility, and the project of kind of getting to where they want to go. And there's almost a sense of relief that it's kind of like, okay, now we've got something that we can build on, right? We've got a home. We can build on the fan base. He was even talking about the food trucks and stuff they had on the side. So, you know, and to me, it seems like he kind of wants to be involved in this project, right, moving forward. So, you know, he's got a connection there. Obviously, they did win the championship, so he's kind of drawn to that club from that probably as well. So, yeah, He's been great, and he's always, you know, he's always great to deal with in press conferences and stuff like that. So, yeah, interesting last few games for Western United. Definitely still a team to watch to kind of see what they can still get out of this season, and definitely the Tarnit thing is like a new wrinkle that's kind of added to the season, I think, as well. So, yeah. All right, you know what? I'm going to take a quick break because the next game we're going to get into is the Mariners and Wellington, and I've got a lot of thoughts on that. So, yeah, quick break, then we'll get into Mariners, Wellington, and the rest of the games. Okay, so the Mariners and Wellington, the biggest game of the round, definitely bigger than the Melbourne Derby. I won't hear any arguments otherwise. So we'll talk about this game. And the Melbourne Derby, then probably take another break, and then I'll finish with the last couple of games. So, we've also got power rankings. I've got my updated power rankings for this week. So, yeah, that's still to come. But Mariners Wellington, three words to basically describe this. What a game, honestly. You've got two teams here who are basically right at their peak tactically. Like, the fundamental understanding of all 22 players on Saturday, of their roles, of what they need to do to facilitate the team in different moments, whether that's in possession, out of possession, transition, both moments in transition. And, you know, it was interesting because the last time they played in New Zealand, and it was a nil or draw, it was a really dull game, but it was because they just cancelled each other out. And this time, you actually look at it, and the Mariners were actually more on top, I think, and the Mariners deserve their win. But really, look at the goals, and they're all moments. They're all little kind of moments of either individual brilliance or brilliant passages of play, team goals. So the Mariners, their first goal, the Angel Torres header, and Ben Old's goal were just both brilliant team goals. And then Mikel Docker's goal is just a fantastic individual effort. The thing here is that these two are so well drilled that it needs brilliance to beat them. You know, it requires brilliance, right? And yeah, just fantastic. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the coaches and the compliments they actually had for each other after the game, because this whole dynamic with Jackson with the Mariners and Italiano with Wellington has just been so fucking awesome this season. Like, for someone like me who's a bit of a tactics nerd, to watch this and to see the appreciation they have for each other's games is just so great. But a couple of things first, I want to talk about the Mariners. So, after the Sydney loss, so I said last week, I want to clarify, after their loss against Sydney last week, I said they needed a curveball for Sydney. I didn't say they were in trouble generally. I just think against that specific opponent, they need to do something different, or they need to work out a way to kind of, yeah, get the monkey off their back, essentially. And I think maybe there was a general sense, though, people were talking about, oh, the Mariners slipping up a little bit or something like that. And Mark Jackson was kind of very, it seemed like he was eager to get on top of that in his press conferences. But they clearly got on top of that because they've had an excellent response since that defeat. Because against City, it probably wasn't their best performance again, but they got the result. And then here, they kind of said, you know what, fuck this. Like, we're at home. We can beat these guys if we play at our best. And that's what they did. And, you know, like, the mental fortitude of this club is fantastic, and what they're able to give for their players, because, like, this could have easily ended in lose to Sydney, City are 1-0 up, dominating the game, they go on and win it, you lose there, and then all of a sudden you're going into a game against Wellington, who are, you know, who have just been kind of so robust and just able to find results even when they've got, you know, 19 players out, right? And you know, if you're going in off the back of two losses, holy shit, it could be a third loss in a row. What's going on? And you've got the AFC Cup as well, and you want to be still performing well before you go into that, right? But instead, it's we lost to Sydney, don't panic, stay calm, stick to our processes. And will respond, and they did. And they had two home games as well, which helped, but it was also important because it's like, you got two home games, you got to go and get the results, because now they've got, we mentioned just before the break, they've got this tricky trip to Western United, and now, Also, the target's on their back. The target's been on Wellington's back all season, right? But now it's on the Mariners' back. Everyone's kind of, okay, can they slip up? Will they slip up? Victory for sure, who are now kind of got a little bit of a taste maybe for the premiership. We'll think, okay, if we can beat Wellington, can the Mariners slip up against Western? There's a path there for us. And a couple of things as well. So the Mariners are in a great position. They are in a great position now, I think. So all three of the games they've got left in the league are very winnable. They go to Western United, they host Adelaide, and then they've got an F3 derby to finish, which is kind of like poor Newcastle, honestly, on there, right? Like, Newcastle are going through all sorts of hell off the pitch, you know, and by the way, I'm going to give them a lot of praise later, don't worry, we're going to talk about their win against Sydney, but they're going through all sorts of hell off the pitch. Looks like they're going to lose Lucas Moragas to the Mariners. And then the Mariners could come in on the last day and beat them in an F3 derby to win the premiership on their turf, right? Like, it's just kind of, you know, it never ends for them at the moment. So, yeah, poor Newcastle. But with the Mariners, the only thing I see as being detrimental to them winning the title now is the AFC Cup. Because it's not just, I think this team that they're playing, from all accounts, from what I've read, from what people have told me, they should be able to get the job done against, correct me here if I'm wrong in the comments or whatever, Abdish Atakant. Yes, that's, I think, how you say it. The Kyrgyzstan team. And they should be able to get the job done against them. But it is, they're going there first. And you are going to Kyrgyzstan, right? So that's going to be interesting. It's probably a different environment. I don't even think any of these Mariners players have probably played in Kyrgyzstan before, right? So, unless any were involved with the Socceroos when they went to Kyrgyzstan, I don't know off the top of my head. But the thing is you got to go to Western, so there's one trip. Then I don't know if they're going straight from there to Kyrgyzstan. Obviously, I'm not privy to that information. But they're going to have to, yeah, definitely manage this, because you've got to go to Western, then you've got to go to Kyrgyzstan. Then you've got Adelaide coming to town, and who knows, if Adelaide win this week, and then, I don't know, if Adelaide can then beat Western again, and then all of a sudden Adelaide are kind of like, all right, we're coming there with like two games left to finish six. You know, it could be tough. It could be tough. So the travel thing is going to be the biggest hindrance potentially to them getting it done. But I really do think they can go 9 from 9 in terms of points with the last three league games. I don't think there's any reason why they can't. So, yeah. They should be able to get this done. And for Wellington, so a few things here. Like, in case anyone hasn't realized already, like, Wellington, this is not a fluke. Like, they are not just kind of, I know if you go into XG, which we all love expected goals and stuff, you could say they've been lucky in certain games, teams haven't taken chances, and there's been other games where they've been super clinical. But when you've got this much of a sample size, and when you see them in all moments of the game against a team who's as good as them in the Mariners, against Sydney when they beat them recently, like, what they've got is an elite coach, man. Like, Giancarlo Italiano is brilliant. He's so good. And he is espousing every ounce of talent out of this squad. Every single ounce. And for them to be able to, like, I'll be honest, I was watching this, and when Angel Torres scored, I felt, you know, Wellington are in big trouble. Like, I actually felt the Mariners are going to go on and win this 2-0 or 3-0, because the momentum's just so with them. They're at home. Wellington don't look like they can get, you know, out of their half a little bit at times, you know. And all of a sudden, they just got this belief, this inner belief, and they just score a brilliant goal. Like, it's a fantastic goal. They completely play through the Mariners. And all of a sudden, you're going, oh my God, like, they've equalized, and the momentum suddenly with them, they could go and win this. And so their ability in games to not let what happens in the game affect them, stick to their principles, and then Italiano's ability to make certain adjustments in the game to help his team is like, it's Jackson. I think Talle deserves a lot of props. Like, these guys are doing fantastic jobs with their teams. And what was really great after this game was the praise that both coaches gave each other. And so here's a quote from Jackson, which is a couple things actually, about the Mariners, about their approach to this game, and also Italiano. So, normally we do a lot of work tactically pre-match, but all we did as a group of staff, we discussed it, and we showed an array of goals that we've produced this season, all about our principles, our behaviors, and things like that. Sometimes when you don't look back on things and the goals, You forget how good that group of players have been this season and what they've created and how they've scored the goals. Okay, I didn't have the quote in here about what he said about Italiano, but this is still important. So the Mariners have become the innovation kings in the A-League. Like, that's just a reality. They always approach things slightly different. They've got, you know, mindset coaches and things like that. Like, they have invested in areas that other clubs are not. And this is another example of the brilliant kind of, let's do something totally different that the players won't expect, but that'll still get them so motivated for the biggest game of the season. Because this was the biggest game of the season for both teams, really. And you saw it in the celebrations, obviously, too. And, you know, I think for Jackson, I think maybe his mentality here was, we're playing a team who we struggled to score against last time, and it's another big game. And the last time we had a big game, which was a Sydney game, we failed. So maybe we need to show the players, well, let the players make sure they know their quality, you know, which I'm sure they do. But sometimes a helpful reminder every now and then is good, right? And to do it before this game and show them the goals they've scored, which there's been heaps of brilliant goals the Mariners have scored this season. And not just that, but in the game, they scored two brilliant goals, you know? So clearly that worked. And yeah, just a genius little, you know, sometimes in the A-League, you've got to have, for me, the league can be so even when we talk about squad quality, when we talk about, you know, everyone's kind of, there are certain, a lot of teams spend very similarly, you know, in terms of how much they're outlaying on their visa players or their squad in general, wages and all that sort of stuff. So you've got to have a curveball, which I've just spoken about before. I said they need a curveball against Sydney, but in general, the Mariners always do seem to have that curveball. And this was just another different approach that you can take to a game, because the players are probably going into that thinking, this is such a big game. You know, like, there's the pressure is at its peak. You know, what if we lose this? Oh my God. You know, what if the spot in the top two might be in trouble? You know, and like, I say this all the time, like, players, you know, they read everything, they know what's out there, they see the table, like, you can't avoid it. So, yeah, it's just a brilliant little mindset, you know, man management sort of tactic that you can use as a coach. So, real props to Mark Jackson. And Jackson also gave props to Italiano for the way Wellington had coached, which I think was great to see. And Italiano gave some flowers back. So here's a quote that he had after the game. So, I think Mark is pretty switched on tactically, and I think it's a bit more of a game that happens before the actual game. When you neutralize each other, it's more moments than anything. Again, look, the goal they score is a moment. Last second, it's massive. The fact they didn't give up as well, you match that up with the tactics, it bodes for a good combination. And he was saying that about the Mariners, but you could apply all those words, that description, to Wellington, and it would be the same. Like, you know, and he kind of touched on what I said where, yeah, that game was all about moments. It was all about moments. And the Mariners just produced one more moment than Wellington, you know? That was the reality. But, man, if they are, they're probably, I mean, if they finish as the top two, which is likely, it's, there was the game this week between Wellington and Victory will tell us. But if they do finish in the top two, then I think it's, like, I really want that to be the grand final. Like, just because the way they've matched up this season would be fantastic. So, yeah, it's great stuff. It's great stuff. To see two coaches and two teams at their peak and then be able to show that appreciation after. Like, Italiano could have been really pissed off, right? Like, you know, he's just lost the 92nd minute away from home, a game which, if they got a point, they're probably they're definitely in the driver's seat to win the premiership. But instead, he's actually taking his time to say, you know what, that's a freaking good team over there, and Mark Jackson's done the same. And having that respect, I think, is always great. So, yeah, both these two teams are in a great spot. I think the Mariners now should go on and do it. But you know, stranger things have happened. This is the A-League after all. So, yeah. All right, Melbourne Derby. So another team who might have something to say about this Wellington Mariners thing, Melbourne Victory. So this game, Melbourne Victory fucking dominated this game. Melbourne City had two shots on target. One of them was a goal. And I know people say, oh, well, City edge possession, you know, they had, what's that? I've got it right here. They had, you know, 60 more passes. Like, honestly, I don't care. Like, you could throw whatever stats you want. Anyone who was watching this game could see Melbourne City didn't have anything. Like, they showed nothing in this game. Melbourne Victory were all over them from minute one. I think, really, it was a mistake, I think, from Teague/Brimmer. I don't really know what happened there. And then Arslan's in. You can't give Tolgay Arslan a chance like that. He's always going to take it. But for me, this was the best Melbourne Victory performance I've seen in weeks. And I've been, you know, very critical of them. I kind of said last week how I don't think, for me, I'm not going to take them seriously just yet. They keep playing like that, and I definitely will start to take them seriously. Don't worry. And you've got, like, Bruno seems to definitely be... I know there was this kind of period after the Asian Cup where people went, oh, you know, is he... What's happened? The goals have dried up a little bit. Excuse me. But clearly, Bruno... Early season Bruno is back, right? So, they've got that. They've got De Silva at the back, who's been fantastic, and then looks to be a threat on set pieces now. We saw another late winner. So, for me, my only thing with them is, can they get more out of Mishash? Because if they can get, and what I mean by that is more goals and more assists, if they can get more front third output from him, then that's another thing which kind of edges them a little bit closer to, I think, Wellington, the Mariners. But right now, like, tactically, that game, they got spot on. Melbourne City could not play through their press. Melbourne City had no sort of control in the game. And we know with Melbourne City, one thing that's still been consistent about them this season is they've still had a sense of control in most games. But last night, on Saturday night, they had no control over that game. That was Melbourne Victory's, and really that could have been 3 or 4-1, and I don't think it would have been surprising at all. So kudos to Melbourne Victory, and kudos to Tony Popovich. I think he got the game spot on. So yeah, I think a couple other things. Daniel Arzani, I spoke about last week. I'm not going to speak about him too much, but like, he's playing really, really well at the moment. I actually think, like, this is... I don't know if this... Yeah, look, no, I'm going to go there. I think this is as close as we've seen from his, you know, like, Daniel Arzani bursts on the scene days at Melbourne City. This is as close as we've seen to that recently. He's been excellent. And I know there was a lot of discussion during the game of why is Arzani playing on the right and not on the left. We saw Caden, one of our FPF writers, asked Tony Popovich after the game, you know, has he considered basically playing him on the left a bit more? For me, I actually think Popper gave a good answer, to be honest with you. I know, like, the thing in modern day football is playing inverted wingers. Playing wingers on their wrong side so they can cut inside, right? Yep. But I think with Arzani, I don't think it's... Like, the main argument I had against this idea of, oh, he has to play on the left is, like, how many chances has he created from the right, though? If you still went and had a look, right? So the fundamental issue is that Melbourne Victory don't take their chances. So I think left or right, you know, fundamentally, he needs his teammates to probably finish some of the chances that he's setting up a bit more often, and then we wouldn't really discuss that. So I don't think it's a big thing. Could he play on the left more? Yeah. Is it the be-all and end-all of Melbourne Victory season and their attacking output? No. I actually think, like I said, the Mishash thing is a little bit more important. Can they find a way to get more out of him, get him in more goal-scoring positions, basically, is kind of what I'm saying. Because if they can do that, then... I mean, this Victory attack, like, there's always going to be... Basically, you've got that Fellaini spot. He was good on Saturday, but that Fellaini spot can kind of be interchanged with Volupele or Khalifi, right? And it's kind of based on form, I think, whoever plays there. But in Arzani, Mishash, and Fornaroli, you've got a front three there, or three of their front four, who are, you know, as good as anyone in the league. So, one of the best in the league. So, it's, yeah, there's a lot of quality there. There's a lot of quality there indeed. And Jason Guerrier, I want to give a shout out to as well, because he's been fantastic recently. Winning the penalty, of course. On the flip side, Vicente Fernandez. I mean, what the fuck is he doing this week? Like, or last week? Gave away two stupid penalties. One, because he didn't scan and lost the ball, and he was forced into pulling back Christian Theoharis. And then one, because he, again, took a... Well, actually, no, what happened? He basically just completely missed time and didn't realize where Jason Guerrier was. That's what it looked like. And he was very frustrated with himself after he brought him down too. You could see it, because he's cost his team. Like, the thing about it was, even though I still think Victory would have scored anyway, Like, don't give them the equaliser. You know what I mean? Like, they still have to... The best thing with Melbourne Victory, when you're playing them in that... And they're in that... they're in that mode is... Okay, we're 1-0 up. They're all over us, but we know Melbourne Victory don't take their chances. So, can we just ride this wave till halftime, get in, we're 1-0 up, make some adjustments maybe defensively to help us out, and then maybe take some control in the second half. But instead, you give them a stupid penalty, right? Credit to Jason Garriott. First of the ball, pushed it past him. Always a penalty every day of the week. But, like, don't give them goals. Like, they've already got Bruno Fornaroli. Why hand them penalties? Why hand him penalties? You know? So, yeah. Just a dumb week for Vicente Fernandez. Has to be said. So, yeah, I think Garriott, good stuff. Arzani, good stuff. Fornaroli looks great. Victory look better. They look better than what they did in recent weeks for sure. And I think now I've got, definitely, I'm very interested to see how they play against Wellington this week. I think it's an interesting game because who knows, that could be a, you know, semi-final preview, right? So, yeah, very interesting. I think you've got two teams as well who probably don't like to be the aggressors, right, when they play. I think both teams are more comfortable maybe sitting in and being more pragmatic. So it's going to be interesting to see how they match up. I think when they played earlier on the season, like, Victory were all over them, right? Like, in that game at Amy Park. If I'm not mistaken, Wellington scored without actually having a shot on target because it was an own goal. So, like, Victory maybe they match up well against Wellington. You know, we'll see. This is a big litmus test. I think if Victory can back up a derby win like that, being so dominant, and then go to Wellington and win, it's like, okay, then I'm going to have to put them in the contenders group. I think I'm going to have to, right? Like, that's enough evidence for me to go, okay, now they're serious again. They're like they were at the start of the season where everyone went, holy shit, no one's going to stop this Victory team. They're a juggernaut. And then we had this mid-season period of, okay, looks like they're not that good. And then now we could maybe finish with having to reconsider them again because, I don't think I've seen Melbourne City be as kind of dominated like that in a game in quite a while in terms of, like, basically not being able to lay a glove on their opponent at all. And then Lekki McLaren came on, you know, and it was more of the same. Like, you know, Victory just, yeah, it was going to be 3 points for them or it was going to be a draw. Like, if City were never going to win this game the way it was playing out. So, yeah. That's my derby thoughts. I think Victory are kind of just reminding everyone that they're still relevant, right? So, yeah, going to be interesting to see what happens in Wellington this week. All right, I'm going to take another break to rest my vocal cords. And then we've got Jets Sydney and Perth Adelaide. Okay, coming back. Jets Sydney, a very, very interesting game. For a few different reasons. So Newcastle win 3-1. And first I'm going to actually start by talking about the Sydney FC side and their team for this game actually as well. So there was two main changes. So that centre-back pairing that they've had with Girdwood Reich and Hayden Matthews basically was not there this game because Girdwood Reich, of course, was sent off against Perth. And then Matthews, I presume, was just rested. You've got a young kid, was he 19? I'm just going to quickly check that. Yeah, 19. And he's been playing pretty much every game. He's been fantastic for them. And it's probably a good game. Ufuk-Tale probably thought it was a good game to rest him. But problem is that he's got Gabriel Lacerda, who anytime gets an opportunity at the moment, plays like dog shit. And basically, against Wellington a few weeks ago, he got turned inside out for the winner by Costa Barbarousis. And then on Sunday, the Stamatopoulos goal, the third one, where Stammer is just onside because Lacerda does not push up quickly enough. He doesn't step up. And for Talay, that would be even more infuriating because that notion of your back four stepping up, playing a high line, that's been so key to Sydney's success. And for him to not do that and be an experienced player would have been absolutely fuming. I reckon Ufuk-Tale would have been fuming with that. So, you know, to give away a goal like that, I mean, obviously this game was kind of lost in the first half of Sydney though. I think, first of all, Newcastle, big shout out Clayton Taylor, who I was a little bit critical of for his performance against Melbourne City last week, but superbly took his goal against Sydney here. And it was kind of one of those moments. So Ryan Grant goes across to win a 50-50 and he loses it because Sydney want their players to step up, right? Whenever possible, to come across, shuffle across whenever possible, to put pressure on the ball. But if you lose a 50-50 like that, then all of a sudden there's space. And Newcastle found the space. They got to Taylor. Great finish. Then the second goal. So I'm going to talk about Rob Stanton and Newcastle in a moment, but just a brilliant goal. Like, Stein's great little ball. Piscopo, who's really kind of found his feet again in recent weeks to finish the season, which is great for him personally. And buries a finish really well taken. So credit for Newcastle on that one. Then we have the red card. So I have to talk about this. So basically, so the situation itself, so as Rob Stanton said afterwards, and Luke Bratton actually said this on the pitch after the game, basically Sydney or Newcastle had a player who, it's not clear who it was, I can't remember who, but who had to change his boots or change his shoes, something like that. And so Stanton apparently told Philip Chanchar to basically start something to delay the game whilst this player could change his boots. And it seems like he was just kind of trying to get in Robert Mack's head, essentially. But what has turned into a kind of fun little, not fun, but a little kind of just kind of delay the game a little bit, just got out of hand. And so Philip Chanchar, first of all, it's a massive flop. It's pretty obvious. You can go have a look at it fucking 60 times. It's an obvious flop, right? Robert Mack shouldn't raise his arms, I agree. But he also, as Ufuktale pointed out, he didn't actually look. He didn't know where Chanchar was. He just kind of could hear him, obviously, because he was right in his ear and just kind of tried to, you know, usher him away with his arms, right? But Philip Chanchar was asked about it by Ben Homer after the game. And I think one of the lines he said was, "Oh, I just tried to ask him what the problem was." And it's like, mate, if you were asking him what the problem was, then you would have, like, you could have done that from, like, five steps further back if you wanted to ask him what the problem was, right? And also, maybe the problem is that you're, like, 2 meters or 2 centimeters away from his face and you're, like, yelling in his ear. Like, maybe that's what the problem is. So, like, if that was me and Philip Chanchar was basically in my face asking me what the problem was, yeah, I probably would have done the same thing and, like, smacked him with my hand. Like, you know what I mean? So, obviously, here at the moment, it's after the game. He probably didn't know what to say. Maybe that's the answer he's given. And Stanton gave us a little bit more context to the incident afterwards. But, you know, come on, man. Like, you have not covered yourself in a lot of glory with your actions there. Let's be honest. So, yeah. The red card, I'm going to talk about now. My issue with this whole red situation with Robert Mack is actually not so much what happened on the day, but what's happened yesterday, and is that the MRP. And I already spoke about this a few weeks ago on the podcast, but the MRP at this point, like, what actually is your role? Like, if you're going to keep protecting referees this much, where it's pretty obvious to anyone watching that, I mean, Rob Stanton himself said it's not a red. So it's pretty obvious to anyone watching what happened there. We can go back to the other, I'm going to talk about the other reds that Sydney have had this season, but anyone watching that incident can tell you that it's not a red card, right? So I don't understand how the MRP can get in a room together, watch that, and come to the conclusion that it shouldn't be overturned. And the only conclusion can be is that they want to keep protecting referees. Now, I get why you want to do that, because referee abuse is not great at the moment, and I see it every week coaching at a junior level, don't worry. But not keeping them accountable for decisions like this also doesn't help. So, you know, there's been inconsistencies in the officiating all season, and the MRP is not, for me, doing the job it should be doing, which is keeping referees accountable for their performances, okay? It's not making sure we protect referees, it's keeping them accountable. Of course, there's going to be 50-50 decisions where you'll back your referee. No worries, absolutely. But that was not a 50-50 decision. That was not a red card, okay? Anyone could have told you that. Anyone could have told you that. So that's disappointing for me. That's disappointing. And I really think, you know, the MRP needs to look at their processes and what they're doing. Because for me, what's the point of having an MRP, a match review panel, if every time you review something, you're just going to go with the referee? Like, The whole idea of a match review panel is when there's incidents in a game that the referee didn't get right at the time, or he didn't get a good look at them at the time, which, you know, is kind of stupid in itself because we have VAR now, but anyway, we can kind of, a couple days later, come in, review it independently, away from the referees, and give an independent take on it. And for me, it doesn't seem like it's independent, because at the moment, it just seems like the referee is getting backed every week for any contentious decision. So, yeah, I'm not happy with that. I'm not happy with that at the moment. So, anyway, let's talk more about the game itself. And Sydney, for me, you know, and people are going to kind of, oh, like last week you were so high on Sydney, and then look, these next two games, they've drawn and they've lost. So, first of all, they've been down to 10 men in both games. It's very important, okay? It's very important to what Sydney want to do. You can't press the way they want to do with 11 players, with 10 players, right? It's just a reality. They're always going to sit in with 10 and try and be really compact, which is what they tried to do in this game. And you saw with the third goal, I just mentioned with Lacerda, if you don't push up properly with that 4-3-2 essentially that they were playing with 10 men, then you're going to leave someone onside like they did with Stammer. So for me though, I watched the game against Perth as well in the week, and I think against Perth, I think they were actually really on track to get that done, and then they basically switched off on one moment, and then Gerwood Riker's left kind of one out with the attacker, and then he has no choice but to either bring him, well, the choice he has is to bring him down or let him go. He decides to bring him down and get sent off. So basically that changed the game in that one there. And this one you could say, well, they were already 2-0 down. And for me, the reason for that was they just were totally fatigued. That's what I felt watching this game. I didn't think they had the same willingness and there was the same intensity when they pressed. And I think with Sydney, the way they are constructed, and I think with them too, I've talked about this with guys like Ryan Grant, Luke Bratton, even Caceres can be hot and cold. Like, if they're, for me, their curveball is their pressing, right? It's pretty obvious. So if that's not going to be at its best on any given game, then for me, they're beatable, because I don't trust some of their players to actually be consistent enough. So there's that too. And they've still got some young ones in there too. You know, someone like Corey Holman as well. Jordan Courtney Perkins, okay? So for me, watching this was, the intensity of the press wasn't there. And as soon as you saw that, and Newcastle were able to play through that a lot easier, and Newcastle are a good football team. They can play. They can play, right? So if you're not going to have the same intensity with the pressing, and then you can't create really, and then you go down to 10, like, it's never going to end well. So yeah, I think now that this week has kind of gotten over for them, and they're going to have a week to prepare for the derby, I think we will see a Sydney FC which is more akin to what we've seen in recent weeks in terms of their pressing. But yeah, their game starts with their pressing. If that's not going to be where it needs to be, they're going to struggle. So, that's probably the downside, to be honest with you, to how they've evolved this season, is that it's kind of, they really have to be at it every game. They really have to be at it, you know? If they're not, then it's easy to get at them. So, yeah, Newcastle, though, credit to them. They did a great job of exploiting that. And I wanted to talk about, so a few players. I mentioned Piscopo already, kind of reminding everyone of his quality. I'm not sure if that's kind of a, hey, this is what I can do. I'm putting myself in the shop window to get another contract elsewhere next season. Who knows? Apostolos Stamatolopoulos is unbelievable, which I think is kind of, you know, this is not like a purple patch. This guy is actually unbelievable. Like, his ability, Stanton has talked about this season too, his ability to both come to feet, going behind, you know, good combination player. Like, he's just an all-round great striker now. And he wouldn't look out of place in any other system. I know there was a report this week that Melbourne City apparently are taking an interest in him, keeping tabs. Look, if there's an opportunity for them to sign Stammer as a Jamie McLaren replacement, I would be jumping on that in a heartbeat. So, yeah, you know, that's, who knows? If he ends up there, I mean, that's tasty as well. If he ends up there, I'd be very intrigued to see how he'd go at Melbourne City, say, next season. Yeah. Another guy as well I want to give a shout out to is Callum Timmins, who's actually been really good recently. If you've been watching Newcastle games, he's been quite serviceable as a midfielder. So he's a guy who was really young when he came out at Perth Glory. Him and Steins kind of made the move over to Newcastle, And Timmins has just kind of been hot and cold the whole time. But yeah, he's been good of late, so I thought I'd just give him a shout out. But Stanton, who for me, if you watch, I've talked about this before, but if you watch Rob Stanton press conferences every week, there's a real aura of a guy who knows the task that he's got, knows the club situation, understands that he can't, there's only so much he can do, right? But I think he's done a really, really good job under the circumstances. And I would assume most Newcastle fans would agree, because I think they're a good football team when they play. I mentioned that already. I think they can play a really nice, sophisticated possession style when they're on. And for me, though, like, after they lost to, say, Adelaide United a couple weeks ago, like, they could have mailed this season in easily. Like, I actually felt going into this game, I was a bit like, phew, you know, Sydney with that pressing game, Newcastle with their inexperience, I don't know how this is going to end up, right? But they are, it's kind of with Western United as well, where they're, you know, they're sticking to the task. The focus is being maintained in the group. And with all that's going on, with every day at the moment with the Newcastle Herald, it seems like there's a new update with the ownership situation, right? And the players, like I said before, right, the players see that for sure. And it's just really impressive that they've just been able to still kind of keep at it. You know, don't worry, let's play as if this club is, you know, very stable and we're going to be here next season and work towards something. And really, in any situation in football, whether you got, like, no owners or whatever's going on, for these players, like, they should still be playing, right? Because, as in, they should still be giving a shit. Because at the end of the day, for a lot of these guys, besides, like, I think Mark Natta did sign a new contract, Costa Grozos, there was reports that he might extend. But, like, someone like, you know, Clayton Taylor has been the shop window for Europe. You don't want to dip into performances. You want to keep interest, right, from overseas clubs. Piscopo, I just mentioned, maybe putting himself in the shop window for other clubs. Stammer, definitely, whether it's Europe, abroad, or whether it's another A-League club, wants to keep his performances at a good level. So there's always an incentive. There's always an incentive. And I think Newcastle was showing that, no matter the situation, you know, you can be a really cohesive unit and still get results. So yeah, good job for them. Good job for them. And also Stanton was just like really, really candid with the whole Chanchar Max situation. Like I mentioned before, like he kind of just gave the whole, yeah, like, yeah, I told him to start something, you know, like he was, you know, being asked by the principal, you know, what he had done to kind of get called in. But yeah, he's a real honest guy. He really is. That's the approach that he's taken. Like each manager in the A-League kind of takes a different approach, right, when they're talking to the media. And Stanton, it's just full on honesty every week. So nah, he's good. He's a down to earth guy. And I think he knows Robert Mack too, right? He worked with him at Sydney FC. And he was probably felt bad, right, that Mac's now going to miss the derby, which is the other stupid thing about this. Like, he's also going to miss, like, probably the biggest game of Sydney season now, because of this whole situation. But you could kind of feel when he was talking about it afterwards that he kind of felt bad that Robert Mack, a player he had worked with at Sydney FC, had been unfairly sent off. So yeah, but Newcastle, still some things to look at for the rest of the season. And for Sydney, yeah, like I mentioned with MacArthur, suddenly kind of looking over their shoulder when, you know, I know, like, Joe Lolley a couple weeks ago when he spoke during the week to the media before one of the games, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was the Mariners game. But he kind of said, we want to win 6 from 6 and we're looking forward. Well, now, yeah, you're in a situation where I'm sure internally they're still trying to look forward. But yeah, you're suddenly kind of worried about losing your spot in the six, right? So, and that would be a shame because Sydney really should be in the six based on the way they've played these last couple of months. They definitely should be a finals team. So, and I want to see them there. So, yeah. All right. Final game, which was, and I'm trying to make sure I've got enough in the tank to get through this, but Perth and Adelaide, just fucking nuts. What a game. This whole Sunday, by the way, was like the best day ever, like for A-League action. Two just great games, a lot of action, controversies, great goals. What do we have? 10 goals over two games, right? So, yeah, like it was fantastic to watch. And this game, I'm going to talk quite a bit about Nestor Iwankunda first. So, I wrote an article last week about Nestor. And I just realized I didn't talk about Sydney's red cards. Okay, I'm not gonna do that. But basically, Sydney's red cards this season, if you actually go through, it's quite interesting. Some of the send offs they've had, but I'm not going to talk about that too much. This podcast is long enough as is. But I wrote an article last week about Nesta, and it was kind of about how he has actually in recent weeks shown. And I spoke about this on the podcast last week too, but he doubled down on it against Perth because he is showing how well-rounded he's starting to become as a player. How he's realizing, I feel now, that it's kind of, I've got quality and I could definitely use it in individual moments to help my team out. Don't worry, of course. But at the end of the day, I've got the ability to bring my teammates into the game and actually unleash their qualities too. Right, and that's what he did. Those two assists were probably the two best assists I've seen all season. I'm probably missing a couple, yes, don't get me wrong, but the first one, which was just this kind of moment of, again, which I spoke about in the article I wrote from his Western United performance, where he's driving, he's got Riley Walland in front of him. And it's a perfect spot for a right footer to basically just keep driving, push the ball to the right and shoot, okay? But, like, Ronaldo chops inside, glory defenders are coming back, keeps cutting inside, waits, Zach Clough comes, supporting run, lays it off perfectly, and Zach Clough is really good at that finish of opening up the body and putting it far corner, and that's an easy finish for him in that scenario, easy goal. Second goal, I've actually just come back, just spoke to Stefan Mork today, who faced the media. Make it sound like it's like he's trying to answer for some kind of controversy. No. He spoke to the media today. And I actually asked him today about this third goal, because Nesta, if you noticed, he's driving again, and he slows down, which for him is unusual. Like, whenever we see Nesta get the ball, it's kind of, okay, it's like, all right, he's all in. He's going to run at like 110 miles an hour. And drives the defender, but he slows down, he stops, and he's very actively looking for Mork's run. Like, he is waiting. Okay, when am I going to time this ball? I'm going to time it so he can get that ball in his path, go around the keeper and score. And he times it absolutely perfectly. Mork runs onto it, and it turns out exactly probably how Nesta envisioned it to turn out with the goal. But last week against Western, there was a similar scenario, and he overhit the pass slightly. And it went through the keeper, but this time he got it perfect. And it's just that growth. It's just that growth of using his ability to make others better. That's his main challenge now, because we know what he can do. That's easy, right? We know he can fucking get the ball from 30 yards and put it top corner. Okay, great. But can you bring others into the game? Can you be the game changer for your team? I.e., can you be the Craig Goodwin? And that's what he's doing. This is actually the part where I'm excited about. Like, I know, earlier in the season when he scored the free kick against Melbourne City, you know, and he's coming up with outrageous finishes and whatever, like, that's exciting, don't get me wrong. But when you actually see an 18-year-old with this much quality now show that he can actually make others better, okay, now we've got a serious, serious talent. So, he's just phenomenal. No real words. So, Adelaide as well, it seems like it's taken 23 rounds, right? But it seems like some of their senior players are starting to forge some consistency. I'm not too sure if that's going to last, to be honest with you. They've got a tough run-in. They've got this MacArthur game on Friday, which I think is winnable, don't get me wrong. But then they've got three away games to finish. So if you're asking me if they're going to make the six, I would still say no. But, you know, stranger things have happened, like I said before. And who knows, maybe Nesta could kind of will them to a couple of wins as well with the way he's playing at the moment. So Mork as well is probably one of the big factors with that too. I think his last two performances have been really, really good. And Ibasuki's found the net again. Isaias, I thought, was excellent, to be fair, on Sunday as well. So if they can keep that level of consistency, which is like the biggest if ever, like, I don't really see it, but if they can, with their senior players like Mork, Ibasuki, Isaias, you know, Javi Lopez, right, then there's a chance. But I don't think it's going to happen. But who knows? Now, other things with Nesta. So statistically, in that article, you can go check it out, frontpagefootball.net. You know, it's one of the recent articles on there. But I spoke about three key stats with him, which was pass accuracy. I spoke about this last week. Pass accuracy, possession lost, and dribble success rate. Now, on Sunday, this is actually insane. I didn't even realize this watching the game. Nesta actually had a 94% pass accuracy from 31 passes. I mean, this kid's a winger. Like, he's not a number six, right? So, and for me, what it means is he's showing that there's less risks that he's taking in his game, which for me, you could say, well, is that the best thing? Because you want someone like him with his talent to take risks in the game and to back himself in. But sometimes we know that when he takes a risk, he can be successful. So sometimes it's better to play more conservatively, recycle possession, use your teammates. And he's doing it a lot more, and he's doing it at a successful rate. So that's only going to bode well for Adelaide United moving forward. So, yeah, he's just in a really good space at the moment. And it's helping the team. Like, he's the heartbeat of the team. Like, that's the reality at the moment. When he plays well, they're going to get wins. It's very simple. So, in saying that, they can't defend, and neither can Perth, who I'm going to talk about a bit now, because, so what is it? The last three times these guys have played, you've had a 4-all, a 3-all, and now a 4-2. So neither team can defend when they play each other, but really in general, Perth have been shocking defensively all season. How many goals have Perth conceded now this season? That is 50 in 24 games. So they're conceding 2 goals a game, which is insane. And all it needed from one of these two teams, and Adelaide kind of found it in the second half, but all you got to do is play like 20, 30 minutes of solid defense, basically, and you're probably going to win this game. So, like, Ben Warland, Jesus Christ, man. Like, he was just dreadful in that first half. Adam Taggart was like, this is so great. Daniel Benny was like, this is so great. They're too slow. They can't compete with us. We're just going to get him on the counter and score twice. Great finishes by Taggart. I mean, he's, Jesus Christ, what a player. He's just been absolutely fantastic this season. There's a lot of running out of superlatives for him. He's just been awesome. And Daniel Benny, who basically, that was like one of his best games I think I've seen from him this season. And he's improving. Like, this, similar to Nesta. Like, these guys who are 17, 18, if they play consistently throughout the season, then towards the end, you're going to kind of see this sudden sort of peak, right? And with Benny, we're seeing that. And next season, I'm really looking forward to watching him. I assume he's going to stay with Perth. It doesn't seem like there's been interest that's been reported from elsewhere. So I think next season he'll play with Perth. He'll be a starter. And he's ready now. Like, I think he's actually ready to contribute on a more regular basis. I think at the start of the season he wasn't, but I think he is now. And every time Stajic talks about him, like, he fucking loves him, man. Like, you can you can see, like, you read the quotes, and he's comparing them to Brett Emerton now on the weekend, and he's talking about his work ethic and stuff. Like, he really takes a liking to Daniel Benny, and I think he's going to make sure whatever decisions they're making around him are going to maximize his development moving forward. So I'm looking forward to next season, Daniel Benny. That's also going to be interesting. So, yeah. Perth as well. I just mentioned that term, next season. Like, they are a team now. I'm looking, okay, this season's over for them. But what kind of things can you get out of the rest of the season to take in the next season? And that's the same for Western United. It's the same for Newcastle, who we hope, of course, will have a next season. So, they're a next season team. You know, what sort of positives can you take? I think, like, someone like, okay, we've got to sign Jared Carluccio if we count on a permanent. We've got to invest more in Daniel Benny for sure. Maybe someone like Gio Colli shouldn't be at the base of our midfield, right? Like, these are the things they're going to work out, I think, over these last few games. And it's probably stuff they already know, right, as well. So, and, you know, you've got Stan Lazaridis now in that role who's probably, you know, taking all these things under consideration as well. So, yeah, crazy, crazy game. And yeah, Nesta, also some things to talk about him with Ollie Roos. So we saw this morning, at the time that I'm recording this, Vince Ferrari did a really interesting report, a really good report, some excellent journalism, I think, from him, where, yeah, he kind of gave us a little bit more context behind Nesta's Ollie Roos snub, essentially. And basically, I've also heard some information about this, and basically, I saw a lot of people talk about when the initial squad was announced and Tony Vidmar gave his comments on Nesta, that there was a... basically, that both parties were seeing eye to eye and the player's been involved in discussions. So, you know, no one should be complaining, essentially, about why he's not there, etc., etc. Now, from what I'm hearing, basically, a lot of the quotes from Tony Vidmar last week are not telling the story of what has actually happened here. And I think if Nesta was put in that initial squad, I think he would be going. Yeah, to be honest with you. And I also think that I didn't speak about this last week on the podcast. I did not like how it seems like, basically, and we kind of know this from Agari's article this morning, because Tony Vidmar has, well, it's understood that he reached out to Nesta to replace him, to replace Marco Tilio, sorry, with him after the Perth game, is what I'm being told. He was asked Nesta about being called up, and he rejected it, right? And for me, like, it's kind of like, if you just basically called this guy up initially, then there would be no issues here at all. And not only that, you haven't called him up, right, when clearly he should be in this squad, number one. And then number two, you've now made up some... What seems like you've made up some Fugazi thing about, you know, he's a roller coaster 24/7 and all this sort of quotes that we heard from Tony Vidmar, which basically seem like utter nonsense. And you've made it sound like he's a victim and he's a mental case. And if I'm Nestor Iwankunda, like, now you've... So, basically... you didn't call me up initially. You went to the press and you spoke about how I've got all these issues, essentially. Like, if you listen, honestly, go and like read the comments again with the angle of, like, well, from the perspective of Nestor Iwankunda, an 18-year-old kid. That's kind of what I would advise you to do, right? Because they read like, you know, this kid is basically too fragile to be in an under-23 squad. That's what it reads like, okay? So you've done that. And then you've gone back on your word about how we're not going to bring him into this squad just because of one injury to Tilio, and you've made basically a last hurrah to Nesta to bring him into the squad. Now, from what I understand, Nesta has rejected that because he's annoyed, right? And do you really blame the kid for being annoyed about the whole handling of the situation? No, I don't, because what the common theme is here, and it's the same with Adelaide United this season and Carl Viet, is that these parties, whether it's Football Australia, LA United, whoever it is, basically seem to not understand how to handle a player of this stature and a player who definitely comes from a different background and a different upbringing, and maybe his understanding of, you know, maybe right or wrong when it comes to, you know, things around the training ground or, you know, code of conducts and things like that is different to maybe the players that were coming through during the NSL era or whatever. And it's not just Nesta, it's any player who comes through now. They all have a very different understanding of the game than the players who came through when Tony Vidmar or Carl Viet or Graham Arnold were playing. It's just completely different now. And I think this whole situation is outlining how some of the coaches that we have in the A-League and some of the coaches that we have at national team level, I don't think have the best understanding from the outside looking in, I don't think have the best understanding of how to guide these young players into where they want to go. So for me, I didn't give my initial thoughts last week on it. I wanted to kind of see how it played out. I would have just taken him in the squad. At the absolute least, you could have used him off the bench, right? Like, Jesus Christ. And if not, if he goes in, he goes to the tournament, to the Asian Cup, and he doesn't play well, he's still going to learn from it. Like, that was my whole thing. Like, at the end of the day, if we do think this kid is as good as we think he's going to be, then he should be able to rise to every challenge. And if he doesn't rise to every challenge, then he's going to learn from it. So why would you not take him in the first place? And now you've basically got your knickers in a knot with this stupid way that you've handled it with the media. And something here just hasn't added up with Football Australia's approach to the situation. And now, selfishly from an Australia point of view, we're now, I think a lot of fans, I'm talking from myself, from my point of view, like, I'm worried about the future opportunities that are of calling him up to future squads now. Like, is Nessa now going to be worried about, or is he going to be so annoyed where it's like, I'm not going to go and play for them. Like, they basically threw me under the bus in the media. Like, why would I go and play for this coach now? So, yeah. It's just very frustrating. There's a million different ways that this could have been handled, and the way it has been handled is very, very disappointing. So yeah, and dare I say, this is not going to stop this story. Like, if the Olyroos go to, and there's been some other stuff, Louis Dorigo is now not in the squad because of his club being dickheads. But now you've got a situation where you've got a squad which maybe Tony Vidmar didn't initially want. Maybe he had, in terms of, he had some other players on his radar who fell through because clubs didn't release them. Okay. But now, if you go there and you don't qualify, this discourse is going to be so rife. Like, it's going to be like, why didn't you bring Nesta? Why didn't you bring Nesta? Why didn't you bring Nesta? And it won't stop. So, like, you know, well done to Tony Vidmar and to FA for the way they've handled this, because it's been really poor. So yeah, that's it. I'm not going to speak anymore on this situation. All right, I'm gonna finish off with my power rankings like I did last week. This has been a long one today because it's been a very, very interesting weekend. So power rankings, there has been some changes. There definitely has been some changes. So the Mariners have moved from 3 to 1. So, Mariners first, Knicks dropped to second, Sydney dropped to third, Victoria fourth, MacArthur fifth, Wanderers sixth, Adelaide move up to seventh, City drop down to eighth, Brisbane ninth, Western move up to 10th, no, Western were 10th, my bad, Jets move up to 11th, sorry, and Perth move down to 12th. So, the changes from last week, I had Mariners moving up to first, we had Adelaide moving up to 7th, and we have the Jets moving up to 11th. So those were the teams who moved up, and then that means Knicks, Sydney, City, and Perth all moved down in the power rankings. So yeah, and I've got new groups, so kind of things have changed a bit, right? So I've still got the contenders group, which is Mariners, Knicks, Sydney. Victory win this week, and then we might extend the contenders group from 1 to 4. But Victory for me are still in their own group, and that's that, the if they're at their best group, so they're by themselves. Then 5th to 6th, which is MacArthur and Wanderers, MacArthur have now dropped down to the living precariously group. So because I think both of these teams are looking over their shoulder, so they're in that group. And then 7 to 9, which is Adelaide, Melbourne, City, and Brisbane. And I've got them in the even if they make the finals, doesn't matter group, because I don't think any one of those teams, if they finish like 6th, let's say, are really going to be making much noise come finals time anyway. So, yeah. And then the final group, which is 10 to 12. Now, last week, I had, I think, 8 to 12, I called the who cares group, which is probably a little bit harsh. But basically, this week I've got from 10 to 12, so Western, Jets, and Perth. And I've renamed the group, okay? It's a little bit nicer. I've renamed it to the Lay the Foundations for Next Season group. So, which is kind of what I was talking about during the podcast about Western, Newcastle, and Perth kind of laying foundations, looking for things that they can take out of the season to build in for next season. So, yeah, that's the power rankings. Let me know what you think. It'll be interesting to see how this changes next week again. Yeah. I know, yeah, maybe some Knicks fans will be a little bit shitty that they've dropped a second. I don't know. Maybe some City fans will think 8's a little bit harsh, but like I said during the podcast, like, they got smashed against Victory. I was not impressed at all. Not impressed at all. But yeah, it's all happening in the A-League at the moment. It's a very exciting time. This is probably the most exciting time of the year, when all of a sudden there's a bit of jeopardy in the table, you know, finals is around the corner. Like, yeah, everyone really should be tuning in now. This is where it gets interesting, big time. So, yeah, I've been talking for way too long. How long has this gone for? Like, probably an hour and 20, something like that. Jesus Christ. So I'm going to wrap it up now. This has been your host, Christian Marchetti, with another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Make sure you follow us on social media. So that's Twitter, Facebook. Sorry, Twitter. I mean, X, my bad. Jesus. Elon's probably going to sue me. Facebook, Instagram, Threads, LinkedIn, TikTok. We're also on there too. And give us a follow on here on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to it. And give us some feedback as well. Do you agree with my power rankings? Disagree? Should Robert Mack's red card be overturned? I think that's pretty, you know, it's pretty obvious that it should have been. Or maybe what's the role of the MRP? What are your thoughts on the MRP at the moment? Because at the moment, I'm not too impressed by them at all. And can Melbourne Victory still win the title? I don't think so. But that Victory Knicks game this weekend now becomes the game of the round, right? So I actually think, I guess the derby's probably slightly ahead of it. Yeah, but we've got two massive games this week. So yeah, like I said, make sure you're tuning in. A-League, it's all happening. So yeah. That's going to do it for this episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. I'll be back on Friday, so only two pods this week, just so everyone's aware. I'll be back on Friday, and I'm not sure what we're going to do yet, but probably going to be talking something A-League. So yeah, stay tuned. Go check out the website too, didn't mention that, frontpagefootball.net. We've got all sorts of good articles coming out at the moment, and yeah, I'll be back on Friday. Until then, it's bye for now.